Atheist Nomads episode 97, Idaho Atheists with Susan Harrington.
Atheist Nomads is proudly brought to you by Archway Hosting. Check out their low-price, full-featured hosting solutions at archwayhosting.com. That's A-R-C-H-W-A-Y hosting.com.
Hey, we're also brought to you by listeners just like you. Find out how you can become a patron at patreon.com/atheistnomads. That's patreon.com/atheistnomads.
As a concerned parent of the free thought community, I want to advise Atheist Nomad listeners that this is an adult show. There will be things discussed, talked about, topics that may be inappropriate for children under the age of 25, 40. 26, 27, yeah. 40.
We are the Atheist Nomads, bringing you history, science, politics, religion, and interviews with leaders in the atheist community. Not all those who wander are lost. Welcome to another episode of Atheist Nomads. This is episode number 97. I am Dustin. Joining me as always is Wesley.
We're getting really close to a number that really doesn't mean much in the scheme of things.
Hey, to get into triple digits when you've got a base 10 numbering system, it's important. Most podcasts don't make it that far.
This is so true. Wow.
Yeah.
Suck it.
We will finally be in the realm of podcasts that are experienced and likely to not be going anywhere.
Experienced and still broke. What's up with that, guys? Come on.
And joining us today is Susan Harrington. Susan is a longtime secular activist here in the Boise area. She's been involved with Idaho Atheists since what, 1998?
Yeah, 98, I think.
Yeah, so a really long time. She's done a lot of the early fights for separation of church and state here in Idaho and just advancing the secular community. She's also a professional educator and has a pretty awesome background there that we'll have some fun discussing. So, Susan, welcome to Atheist Nomads.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, and I've actually been wanting to get you on the show for a while now. Just we finally got the timing right for it.
Yes. Worked out well.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and start off with, how did you first get involved with the secular community?
Oh, well, I think that would have been, I was listening to the news and saw a man being highlighted in a news story having to do with Ten Commandments on either the Nampa or Caldwell City Hall. And he at the time was American Atheist Idaho State Director. And it just caught my ear. And then I wrote to American Atheist and became a member. And then met up with him, and he was kind of exiting the scene. And so he wanted to start an Idaho Atheist. So that's how it started, is just a meeting with Daniel, and then he went a different direction, and I started the Idaho Atheist going. And so it was really that one little tiny news blip that I think got me going. It's like, hey, you know, he's taking an active role. He's speaking out, saying this is wrong. You know, separation of state and church is being breached. And so just from that one little, you know, I don't know, 30-second news item is I think what perked my ears up and got me going. So that's all it takes.
That is such an awesome, you know, just seeing the butterfly flap its wings and starting a tornado. That's just amazing.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, and for those of you that aren't aware, Nampa and Caldwell are in Canyon County. They're Nampa's about 20 miles from Boise, Caldwell about 35 miles, and they are, for being in a metro area, very, very conservative.
Might I add that that's in the state of Idaho?
Yes, in the state of Idaho. Yeah. Boise's like this little liberal flower in the middle of, well, the desert, which actually is pretty apt for this area since it is desert.
I think the only other little tiny spot in Idaho might be the Sun Valley, Haley, Ketchum area that has some thinkers up there.
Yeah, there.
So that's kind of like Seattle with the whole, you know, Seattle being the liberal spot,
yeah,
the western side and everything else is really red.
Yeah.
The same idea.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, except the red starts as soon as you get out of the city limits. It's not like Seattle where the suburbs are still pretty liberal. Here it's, yeah, the suburbs.
Actually, the north end of Boise is kind of the one place where the red doesn't invade.
Yeah. And actually, the bench has been becoming a lot more.
That's only because liberal. You moved up here, Dustin.
I do not get credit for that. okay, so how did the early years of Idaho Atheists work out? Because most of us, at least that are actively involved in the atheist community, are know how it works in the age of Meetup and Facebook, not mm-hmm. necessarily how it worked before that, the Dark Ages.
Good question. Well, it was very old school, I guess, now that I think about it. We started having meetings and following Robert's Rules of Order very professionally. We did a newsletter, a hard copy newsletter that we mailed out.
Wow.
And we had meetings actually at the upstairs of the Flicks here in town. And they had have a meeting room. I believe the humanists still meet there.
Mm-hmm.
And so very face-to-face and paper copy, yeah. And so, and honestly, I didn't know what I was doing. You know, you have a passion, you have a drive, you know things aren't right. But we got caught off guard. I don't know if you want me to tell that story or not. But
yeah, please do.
The first thing, you know, aside from these meetings, we started the highway cleanup, and that was a volunteer activity because we wanted our members to have volunteer and social, and then also the activist part of the opportunity to, you know, be active in whatever they wanted to do. So it's interesting, from my American Atheist connections, there was a man named Rob Sherman who wanted to come to Boise to speak. And I'm okay, fine. And then at some point he asked, or I brought up the Table Rock Cross, and I did not know what a firestorm it would cause, because Rob was very capable as far as alerting the media, and you know I was so naive, and he kind of he came to town, gave a speech at BSU, and brought up the Table Rock Cross, and he knew more about it as far as how to get the media's attention. So he just said some statements, and oh my gosh, the entire town went crazy, thinking that we were going to file a lawsuit, which one had already been filed at the ACLU a few years earlier. So everyone was scared, and the news eventually at one point said that 10,000 people were walking through Boise to save the cross. And interesting enough, heading the parade was our former state senator, or U.S. Senator Larry Craig. So that's kind of interesting. Nice. Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
Larry Craig, famous for sucking cocks in the Minnesota or Minneapolis airport.
Yes, yes.
That's that guy.
Yeah,
awesome.
Yeah. And he had pushed so much for anti-gay legislation, and then come to find out, you know, he was a hypocrite. So
yeah, he was a self-hating closet case. Yeah,
so, but that's what started our initiation into the scene, and it was a whirlwind, and I was certainly not expecting it, but you know, we didn't file a lawsuit, but we did find out, and this is interesting, and I do want to make sure that this stays in the public knowledge, is that the ACLU at that time, Jack Van Valkenburg was the director, and he invited us in to make copies of any of his files that he had from a 1995 case, I believe, that someone had filed and hadn't gone anywhere. But he actually had the transcript from when the little tiny plot of land was sold underneath the cross. This is after a case in Eugene, Oregon, that someone had filed where they won because, you know, these crosses were built on public land, and then when they were threatened, they would quietly be sold to private hands. And so he had the actual transcript, and sad to say, someone that I do like is Governor Cecil Andrus was involved, but the transcript clearly shows that it was pretty much a sham sale just to protect the cross, to get it out of the public realm into the private. And so that's interesting. And someday maybe someone will have the funds to actually file a lawsuit and do something about that. I don't know. Maybe, I don't know if it's too late or not.
It's if you look at the recent precedent on stuff like that, if it was an illegal sale decades mm-hmm. ago, the likelihood of that being reversed is really slim. If it's a
recent, maybe
if it's still mm-hmm. on government land,
right,
then it's
right.
a lot more likely. Like the
Mount Soledad yeah. in California. Yeah, I've been watching that over the years.
And for those of you that aren't aware about the Table Rock Cross, just to the east of Boise is Table Rock. It's part of the foothills. And there is a cross that's right on the face of it. It's pretty big. And
light it up.
Yeah, and a couple years ago, they actually turned off the lights on it for upgrades. And I had blogged about it once and actually got an email from somebody wanting to know, what happened to the cross? Is it gone? And I was like, I don't know.
It was Madeline Marie O'Hare.
I was so excited because that's a huge eyesore in the view from my backyard is this giant lit cross. And no, they were just upgrading it to LEDs.
Cut great. Down the, now it's brighter.
Yeah, it's about 4 or 5 times brighter, and it uses a tenth as much electricity.
Well, that's a good. I mean, at least they're being energy efficient.
Yeah, yeah. But it's something like 10 square feet of private land. The rest is all state-owned.
Yeah, and I went up there and tried to, you know, look up at the cross arms and see, I wonder if they overhang the amount on the ground. And then I also was trying to trace electrical lines to see, well, I wonder if there's any way they're tied back to where the city might be paying for that electricity to light it up. But I don't know.
So it's a island of private property inside a city property?
Oh, yeah. It's just a little tiny bit that they sold off in a supposed auction, but it was really an illegal land sale. And now it's in private hands, little tiny square under the cross.
Yeah. What I would really like to see at some point is somebody go back and say, okay, all of those deals like that are invalid and that you cannot mm-hmm. have private land less than, say, an acre that's surrounded by public land. Because if it's less than an acre, it was probably illegal in the first
place. And yeah, the intent was to protect the religious. You know, and these are all over the country. It was at the Fraternity of Eagles during the, I don't know, the Charlton Heston Ten Commandment movie is when the mm-hmm. Fraternity of Eagles handed these out in the 50s, handed them out all over the country. And then, you know, if they were on public land and got challenged, then they were quietly and quickly switched over to private land. And I do know there's okay, that's another Ten Commandments. Oh, that's the Ten Commandments I'm talking about. Yeah, not the cross. That's a whole other story, the Ten Commandments story. And we had one here at Julia Davis Park that did get taken out.
Nice.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah, so I switched on you. I switched from the cross to the Ten Commandments. There was just so many instances that, yeah.
Yeah. All right, it's shifting back to the development of the organization.
Okay.
How did you find new members, or how did members find people who wanted to be members find you?
Yeah, yeah. Well, like I said, it was old school. And so one of the ways is letters to the editor. It's interesting writing letters to the editor and old fashioned paper phone books. You know, this is almost before email, or about the time email was started. In fact, when I first started, I got an email that was at atheist@micron.net, I believe. That was way back when. But so, yeah, people would write letters to the editor. And if it was, you know, if you could see that you had like thoughts on this separation of state and church, then you'd pick up the phone book, you'd call that person because you didn't have an address, but you'd have a name. And you'd, yeah, that's how a lot of people got in contact. And isn't that interesting?
It's just weird.
Yeah.
Newspapers, phone books, and landlines.
Yeah, and word of mouth, you know.
Three things I don't ever use anymore.
Yeah, it's outdated.
And right now, that feels like it must have been, you know, decades ago. No, it...
Actually.
1998? That's not that long ago.
Okay, now don't be bringing up age here. I'm a little sensitive on that subject, Dustin.
Oh, but in 98, I'd call people on landlines and use...
Sure.
Read the newspaper and... Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then the news, you know.
Yeah. I've been exclusively cell phone since just before 2000. Man.
Wow.
Times have changed.
So, how did the early days go with establishing the community here? Because, like, one of the things worth mentioning is that Susan was also the founding coordinator for the Treasure Valley Coalition of Reason. She preceded me in that role. So she's been quite the pillar in the community here.
Yeah, I just get things. I just stir the pot, you know, get things.
So what were the old days like?
Let me see.
Didn't she just say to not go there?
Well,
by old days, I just mean pre-meetup days.
Well, I have to say it was, I think it, from my perspective, was a lot. I don't know how to describe it. I think we each felt more isolated, each of the people. I really do, because and cautious and paranoid, you know. I would put advertisements in the paper, again, the hard copy newspaper, about a meeting, and like I mentioned before, at the Flicks, and people would show up, and you know, some of them I still think were just spies, you know, and so we had a feeling of, it was a lot smaller, and so everyone that showed up, you had to wonder, like, are they here for the right reasons? Are they here just to check us out? You know, and you just had to hope that they weren't going to try to, you know, run the organization to ground, which a few people did. You know, a few people did try to, like Idaho Atheists, one of our former board members, you know, I went to a lot of work to get the IRS, you know, and all the 501c3 paperwork done under Idaho Atheists, and then a board member wanted to change it and take the atheist word out, you know, change it to something nicer, and I understood that, you know, totally, but I had already gone to all the work, and so that was a huge fight. It almost tore us apart, and so there were, I think it was, I don't know, I think it was scarier. Yeah. I think you were more isolated and more unsure. And now I feel it's so amazing. I mean, with the meetups and all the work that you're doing, Dustin, and it's just amazing how it seems like, I think people can go forward with more confidence and get more done because they are more confident, certainly more than I ever was.
It's sad to say, but people are still joining meetups to spy on you. I mean,
probably.
We actually had a reporter come into our group a couple different times. And not tell us anything about himself, you know, not there to write a story or anything. It was just weird. He even brought his wife once. It was just
checking you out.
Yeah, we've had Matt Slick, who we had his daughter on the show a while back.
Which was interesting.
That was a lot of fun. But he's been, you know, Matt Slick's a really sleazy evangelist. He trains a bunch of people in basically how to weave logical snares. That's really all it comes down to. He just tries to flub you up and make you look like an idiot. Does that sound fair?
Oh, yeah.
And he's been, at least as long as I've been in the area, he's been trying to spy on all the different groups. He's joined all of them on Meetup, and he keeps trying to bait us into stuff.
He harasses us at the Hyde Park Street Fair at our booth. He comes over and just to get a crowd, which actually helps us in the end. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he comes over and harasses us and, like, you know, go get your own booth, Matt.
Yeah. he kept trying to goad West Valley Freethinkers into sending people to his school to let his people practice on. And kept talking about wanting to join our meetings and come and talk to us. And he never actually did. And then a couple months ago, he came to Idaho Atheists, Meet an Atheist, and had one of his students with them. And they started out just very nice. I talked to him for quite a bit and kept it friendly. And by the end of the night, he was really making people mad.
This is so weird.
Yeah. But one of the people he made mad is Ken, who's gay. And one of the early statements they'd made was about, you know, something anti-gay rights.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. You make statements like that, and he did not do a good job of justifying them from any kind of a rational sense in why it should be in the laws. Yeah. yeah.
I mean, Matt Slick's got Karm and all that, but I think of him as kind of bigger than that, and he's just pulling a Ray Comfort or, you know, just some actual really big evangelist and going out on the street fairs. I just always thought that that would be beneath him somehow.
That's what he wants people to think of him.
Huh.
But best right, I can well, tell...
I'm buying into his bullshit.
Best I can tell, he's just this pathetic little man with way too high of an opinion of himself.
Little pathetic guy with a website.
Yeah, and a radio program.
We did a debate with Eddie Tabish, who's a constitutional attorney in California, and Matt Slick. And I think pretty much everyone in the room would say I think that Eddie won the debate, but not Matt. He thinks he won it.
Yeah, we had Dan Barker coming last year, and he was supposed to be debating. Matt Slick had agreed to come, and then a week before the debate, backed out.
Ooh.
So we had to find somebody else to debate him, and we ended up getting some campus minister at BSU.
Oh, no.
Who...
Dan Barker probably chewed up.
Yeah. He had...
That's kind of sad.
It was sad. This guy got a little bit of practice, but he did not know how to do a debate.
Well, good on the guy for at least giving it a good try.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah.
Nobody else would present the Christian perspective, so he felt like he had to. You can't fault him for that.
No, yeah. I would have bought him a beer after that.
Yeah. We love hearing from our listeners. You can email us at contact@atheistnomads.com, tweet us @atheistnomads, send us a message on our Facebook page at facebook.com/atheistnomads, or better yet, call us and leave us a message at 541-203-0666. We might even play it on the show. You can also help us out by leaving us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcast directory of choice. Shifting gears a little bit, you've also had quite a few awesome roles you've gotten to play with education in the state. Because when people think of Idaho, what everybody thinks is right-wing, very conservative schools. They're not going to talk about evolution or anything like that. But you actually had a pretty big role to play with that.
You know, being in the right place at the right time really does matter. And for the evolution debate, I happen to be in the right place at the right time. I'm still wondering if they're actually teaching evolution around the state, but they're supposed to.
My niece, her biology class at her school to the west of Boise, her favorite part of the biology class was the evolution segment. And they teach it, even in small little farming towns.
Well, if the state's doing its job right, they're being tested on it. So hopefully they're teaching it, because that wouldn't be fair to students. Yeah. You know.
So what role were you in at
that
time?
Well, I happened to be working at the Idaho State Department of Education as the math science coordinator, and this is when the whole debate came up, and so I was in committee meetings, and at the time, and one of my first memories, actually, Ann Fox. Was the superintendent of public instruction, very right wing, and I don't think she knew who I was when she hired me. But actually, in one committee meeting, I remember someone speaking up and saying, "Well, you know, Dr. Fox doesn't want this," and I just kept sticking to my guns, you know, as far as this is the fundamental concept of biology. You know, how can you teach anything about biology without this? And there was other people on the committee that agreed and that were strong, too. And so, you know, it's interesting, you know, and Ann Fox is one that believed in aliens, actually, and talked about that, too. And so, it was a very scary time, because it could have gone the other way. And then she did leave office, and then Dr. Merlin Howard came into office, she was much more rational-minded. And still, the debate went on for years, and back and forth and back and forth. And luckily, we just have enough rational people, scientifically minded people in this state who did speak up and who kept speaking up as long as it took. And so, and at the same time, I think the Kansas debacle helped, because in Kansas they voted not to teach it, and then companies started moving out of the state. And so it all kind of came together. And so a lot of people with good information and knowledge stepped up to the plate and testified. And that's what it takes. Because if you don't, then the other side is going to have their say. And if you don't counter it, then the legislators are going to vote the other way. So, yeah, that was a scary time. And luckily, I think that was 2001, we passed those state standards that included evolution.
Nice.
That's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't have that big of a role, but it was, you know, every person played their part to, you know, you had to have people saying it from many different realms, from the scientific realm, from the government, you know, and I kept talking about separation of state and church as well, you know, because a lot of people still think that they should be teaching religion in the state, which luckily our Constitution is pretty strict on introducing religious books and pamphlets. So
you want to go into that?
I think that our Constitution was written in the 1890s, and this is when the Mormon influence scared a lot of people. So they wrote into our Idaho Constitution very strict standards of not introducing any religious tracts or books, because they didn't want the Mormons taking over, which, interestingly, they kind of have the whole eastern part of our state. But
mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so it is on there. It's on the books that... And, you know, we shouldn't be talking about any, which, you know, I wouldn't mind maybe a comparative religion class. But, yeah, with our Constitution, it's a good thing the way it's written. I don't have the exact wording off the top of my head, but it's, you know, just Google it and you can see it's very strict.
Now, comparative religions is actually in the curriculum for middle school right now.
Oh, okay.
Part of middle school social studies.
So I'm wondering what religions they discuss. That'd be interesting.
So I have twice been a guest speaker for a local middle school.
And you have a great background for that, too.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So the first time was just for one class, and I was kind of giving, like, the initial overview. And this year, it was for all of the seventh graders at this middle school. So they were cycling through, and... I was the day before the final test, and they covered what they consider to be the major world religions. So they had to cover Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Buddhism, and Hinduism.
Okay.
The kids were really fascinated with animism, which kind of like you can't teach biology without evolution. You can't teach comparative religion without animism and paganism. That's the core of all of them. And I had so much fun covering those parts.
And you changed those students' lives, really, and, by broadening the information they don't get, you know?
Yeah. And awesome. Also covered Sikhism, which isn't generally viewed as a major world religion when there's more Sikhs than there are Jews.
Interesting. And you could go on and on with the number of religions there are.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're actually moving it from seventh grade to sixth grade now.
Oh, cool.
And it was amazing. Like there was one question I got from a kid who was asking about Mormons and whether or not they're Christian.
And what did you say?
I said, well, at the most basic level, to qualify as a Christian, you need to believe that Jesus is your Lord and Savior, and Mormons do believe that. There are some Christians who do not view them as Christian, but they're not Protestant or Catholic, but they are Christian.
And it's interesting, their name is, you know, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So
yeah.
They put it in their name, but it's still questioned.
Yeah. I actually got a couple of questions about Mormons. Like, are they Christian? Mm-hmm. Where do they fit within all the different branches of Christianity? It's like, yeah, they're just their own thing. And it was amazing to see these kids, their eyes open up to, wow, it's not just Catholics and Mormons.
Oh.
Yep.
Because in a small town like that here, it's all Catholics and Mormons.
And the easiest way to make a non-believer is to let them see all the religions.
Yep.
Yeah, really is.
That's with my own kids, you know, I never wanted to limit them what they wanted to choose, but all I ask is that they check out lots of different religions. If, you know, if they were interested in becoming religious, I had no problem with that. I'd still love them. But I just asked that one favor. I said, just check out a lot of different religions and pick one that's right for you. And don't just go with whatever one your friends are in. And, you know, needless to say, neither one of them, of my children, are religious. But that wasn't the reason I said that. I just wanted them to choose something for them, because there's so many people, I think, who are in the religion probably that they were born in, and they probably don't feel it inside, you know? And so religion, to me, should be a personal matter. And I don't think it is as often as it should be. It's mm-hmm. more of a social or prestige, or I don't know. It's just kind of a false, you know? People are just pretending, and that's sad.
Yeah. If you're born in most places in the U.S. or Europe, okay, some parts of Europe, you're probably going to be Christian. Mm-hmm. And the type that happens to be predominant where you're at. If you're born in Iraq, you're probably going to be Muslim.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Pure and simple. And likely to think all the rest are horribly wrong.
And just so you being in that classroom, Dustin, that's opening those kids' minds that they have a choice.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and one of the things that I find, you know, I've got the educational background to cover those topics, but also being an outsider, I don't have a horse in that race.
But you also the perspective of being an insider as far as the Seventh-day Adventists.
Yeah.
So you have a great background to talk to these students.
It's oh man, so much fun. And because, you know, most of the teachers probably are having to be very careful not to discuss their own beliefs. And, you know, I had to make it clear, their teachers had made it clear to them before I got there that they could not ask me about my own beliefs. I made it clear at the start of each class period that I would be describing what some people believe, will not be proscribing what you should believe, and that I would not answer any questions about what I personally believe. And they, for the most part, did a good job of not trying to find that out. Because I would have gotten in a lot of trouble if I had just gotten up there and said, all right, all religion is bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did in one class slip just a little on language.
Well, edit that part out.
I think I said, what did I say? I think I said, it's either crap or damn. Didn't slip that much. And everybody was like, I was like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm used to talking to adults.
I'm sure you made a good impression on these students.
Well, and you know, with the work you did with the evolution in the biology curriculum, you're still making a difference for the students going through Idaho schools.
Hopefully. I hear stories that, you know, I hear stories of science teachers presenting it but then poo-pooing it in the same breath. So, and I you just don't know. You hope they're being honorable and doing what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
But if they are really, really religious, then it's probably hard for them because they feel like they're going against their beliefs. But
one thing, if you're presenting it and you're doing a at least reasonably fair job of presenting the scientific facts, even if you poo-poo it. Like, I went through, my biggest exposure to evolution early on was at the Seventh Adventist Theological Seminary in a class called Issues and Origins. It was a 2-semester-hour creationist propaganda class.
And how did you feel when they were presenting it to you?
That the creationists have nothing. All they're doing is trying to poke holes in a couple little bits. They were only presenting really about a 1970s version of evolutionary theory. So it was all about the fossil record. And so all they were trying to do was poke holes in the fossil record. Like, oh, this one spot where the scientists said it was supposed to be 20 million years. No, it was only a few thousand. Well, okay, in that spot, maybe.
Right.
Oh, the transitional fossils.
That's just one lake in Colorado. That's not the whole world.
And you know, this reminds me of the missing link argument, like, oh, something missing here. Well, just the other day they found something, right?
Yeah, 4 hominid species.
Yeah, and so it reminds me of that Futurama series where, you know, the professor or whoever is giving a speech and they're trying to poke holes. Well, you don't have anything here. And then they find something there. And then they don't have then they say, well, then you don't have anything between that and the one before it. And then they find something there. And they keep finding things, but then they keep saying, well, you're missing. And so the places we're missing is getting smaller and smaller.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually,
yeah,
they're going to have to give up that argument.
Yeah. Well, and I came out of a class designed to inoculate me against evolutionary theory and make sure I was a good creationist. I came out the other end believing evolution was fact.
Yeah. So it backfired.
It totally backfired. And so even if these teachers are doing that, for a lot of kids, the ones who would have not just objected to, okay, not done like I did when I was a kid, and when Bill Nye the Science Guy would talk about evolution, I would quietly pray for him.
Oh.
The kids that aren't doing that are going to be hearing the poo-pooing, be like, oh, that's ridiculous, because the science is so solid.
And that's great. Times have changed. You know, when I was in high school, I didn't learn evolution in high school. My parents had a Time Life series. Do you remember those?
Mm-hmm.
And one of those books was evolution. It was my favorite book, and I just spent hours looking at it. And I don't know why, because, you know, it wasn't ever talked about all that much back then. But I just knew something that was there, fascinating, that most adults in my life weren't talking about.
Oh. Yeah.
You never know what's going to
be
the spark for people to question and want more information.
Yeah.
But I think more and more kids are doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so our listeners have heard you before. I did include the National Day of Reason audio on our feed.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about a few years ago when we were in Gary's backyard, Amanda's backyard.
That was not usable.
I was hoping you didn't use that, because
it was so not usable.
good, because we were having a little bit too good of a time.
Yeah. And so, yeah, we had the steps of the Idaho State Capitol this year, but you got the steps in 2005.
Yep, 10 years ago.
Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
Sure. I'll back it up. And for 6 years prior to that, so starting in 1999, I started writing to the governor asking for a proclamation, first starting off with I called it Atheist Heritage Week, because there was a Christian Heritage Week and there's a Christian History Week, too, kind of redundant to me. But so I asked for an Atheist Heritage Week proclamation. And he denied it. But I started keeping track, you know, on the website. That's what's cool about the internet. All the religious proclamations he was issuing out, and not one for atheists. That he did give one, I think, for some science day at one Idaho Science Day at some point, you know, which is awesome. But I wanted something more for our community, and I kept being denied. For 6 years, we tried. And so after a while, I started thinking, you know, this is discrimination. It's not haphazard that he's saying no to us and still continuing to hand out not just Christian, but all different, you know, Hindu and all different types of religious proclamations, you know, but no to us. And so he kept doing that for 6 years. And finally, I was walking by the Capitol building, and it just dawned on me. I wondered if they'd reserved it yet. And so I went and reserved the steps for what would have been the National Day of Prayer, that first Thursday in May, and they hadn't reserved it yet. So I reserved it and thought, okay, you know, they didn't have it, so we're going to take it and we'll make a point here. We'll have our own day. And wasn't much longer than that I got a phone call from the person that was supposed to have reserved it but hadn't, and I think he was from the Catholic Church, and he was pretty upset. And, you know, I'm sorry. It's nothing against you. It's really against our government officials. You know, I really don't care what you want to celebrate, but I don't want our government officials showing favoritism. And so he agreed that they would just have theirs inside. And I said, well, could you try to get everyone through by noon? Because that's when our program is starting on the steps. So, you know, he was upset, but I think he understood, you know, it's first come, first serve. It said that. Well, then the governor's people got involved and pulled strings, and then I got a call from the facilities people saying, you can't have it. It actually is the religious people's National Day of Prayer Day. And I said, well, wait, it's first come, first serve. You know, I was first. And they tried to say, yeah, it's a computer glitch, and it was supposed to be theirs, a standing reservation or something. And so actually, that was probably the hardest 2 weeks of my life. Not the hardest, but it was a very hard time because, you know, like I mentioned before, I felt very isolated, and I had to try to, you know, American Atheist said that if you can find an attorney, we'll pay for it. I said, awesome. But the hard part was finding an attorney. I spent 2 weeks trying to find an attorney that would take the case, and that was the hard part. No one would touch it. Finally, someone took it. Bernie Zahala took it and agreed. And then American Atheist also hired a national person to come help Bernie that had more experience. And Randy Teague, I think it was his name. Yeah. So, yeah, that was the hardest part, is just finding an attorney, because we were in the right. I mean, we had past reservations from the religious community that showed they'd made their reservation on different days and different months. And so it wasn't a computer, you know, it had nothing to do with a standing, consistent reservation. They just made it when they got around to it in the spring. And so we had all the information, and it was hands down. We just needed the attorney. And so when we went to court, it was 4 p.m., the day before Bruce was to have us. So this would have been May 4th, 2005, 4 p.m. Wow. Oh, yeah, I was down the wire. Talk about stress. And the judge decided to go in our favor, obviously. I mean, he had to. The governor's people were on the other side of the table, but Judge Windmill ruled in our favor. He had to, you know, because it was obvious. It was first come, first serve, and I was first that year. So we got the steps and had a great day, and it rained that day too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But it's important. It's important to not let our government officials show favoritism.
Yeah. And, you know, this time around, Gary just on a whim decided to check to see if it was available.
Mm-hmm.
And so he put in his application, and it was available.
That is just too funny.
Yeah.
You would think they would have somebody camped outside of that office on the first day they could register.
Well, and after our deal in 2005, I had heard that then they were making reservations for the next 10 years. Ah. And I don't know how they could unless they changed their first come, first serve policy. But if they did have it for 10 years, well, then Gary stepped in and got it the first day available.
The current rules are that you can only reserve the steps up to 6 months in advance.
Right. So,
and it's first come, first serve at that point.
So maybe they've had to every year be first. But I'm glad Gary did what he did.
Apparently they slacked off a little bit.
Yeah.
Gary got in like the first day or two he could.
That's awesome.
I do happen to know. Considering how much work it is, you know, every 10 years isn't too terribly bad.
No.
If we could at least keep that up as kind of a, yeah, we're here.
Reminder.
But, you know, worst case scenario, there's always the city hall steps. Mm-hmm. There's the steps around the side of the Capitol. There's the rotunda, which this year, that's where the National Day of Prayer people were.
Yeah.
How much does it cost to reserve the stairs?
Free.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Go for that every year.
Yeah. It's a government public building.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You can even get married under the rotunda.
Yeah. Yeah, people do that. Oh, you did that.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Free.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Granite, you know, all the way up.
The acoustics in there are horrible, but...
Still, yeah. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, the acoustics on awesome the steps pictures. Are also pretty bad.
Mm.
That was fun to clean
but
up.
But hey, but I thought that... Wasn't there a place you can... I don't know if it works in this rotunda where you can stand on one side and if you whisper, then someone on the other side. Something about this is triggering my memory back in the Founding Fathers. Was it when Philadelphia was the...
It's the current U.S. Capitol.
Was it the current
building.
One? Right.
Yeah,
and so you can whisper on one side and the other side will hear you.
The House had their offices in the rotunda at the time.
Yeah.
And John Quincy Adams, who former president, then Speaker of the House... And yes, he was Speaker of the House after he was president. He had positioned his desk right in the exact spot where you can hear whispering at the desk of the opposition party's leader.
Of course.
So he would just sit there and listen to everything they were saying. I don't think it works the other way. It's just one way.
Or he kept really quiet.
Yeah. Didn't say anything. But so, yeah, if you do a tour of the Capitol now, at least when I had that tour, and that would have been 98, they will have one person stand on the one spot. They've got markers there, and then other people at the other side. And then the one person just starts whispering, and you can hear everything.
Yeah. Yep.
I hate to say it, but I think they actually talked about that in one of those horrible National Treasure movies. If you like this show, consider giving us some financial support. We make it really easy with one-time donations, or to support us on a per episode, monthly, or even annual basis using PayPal or Patreon. Find out more at atheistnomads.com. Use the links on the right side of the page. $1 an episode is all we ask. Please think of the kittens. So, were you raised religious, Susan?
No, my parents didn't really say anything one way or another. And I'm glad they didn't indoctrinate me. I heard my dad say maybe one for sure, maybe two comments during my childhood.
Yeah.
And my mom was raised Catholic, and so she, you know, took us to church on Easter and Christmas, and she showed us how to do the rosemary. But there was rosary.
Yeah.
I like rosemary better, but
yeah.
There was never any follow up. I mean, she showed it to me once, but she never then mentioned it again. Never asked me if and so I really tried to be religious, but I knew my dad wasn't, and you know, not overtly. He never talked about it. I just heard him overheard him one time. My dad was a geologist and would visit these old miners, you know, with their mining claims. And I heard him one time. I was pretty little. He came home and was talking to my mom about this old miner he'd ran into that was, you know, talking about the Lord and have you been saved and all that. And my dad told my mom, I just told him that, you know, I don't believe any of that Jesus stuff. And he left me alone. And my little ears picked up on that. And, you know, so it was never talked about. But when I overheard that, I thought, okay, not everyone believes. So I was lucky. I was lucky that my dad was an atheist, and my mom, even though she was raised Catholic, she didn't get her church wedding. And that I've told that story before. But my dad got in a fight with the priest. My dad called the priest a pagan, and the priest called my dad a heathen or something, and no wedding for my mom, poor girl. They actually, this was in Portland, Oregon, and they ended up eloping to Payette, Idaho, because the age was lower in Idaho.
Oh,
so
yeah.
They got married over here, spent their wedding night in a cornfield. So poor mom, she didn't get her church wedding, but I really am glad that I was not indoctrinated and, you know, kind of left to just figure things out. And
so she was 16.
No, she was, she would have been maybe 18 or 19. It was a year difference. And so
at least in the early 90s, Oregon was 17 and Idaho was 16.
This was in the 50s.
So then they might have lowered the ages.
They might have changed, but I know that Idaho was 1 year lower than, I'm trying to think. I think they were 18 maybe, and Oregon might have been 19. And so they just came over here and got married. And Yeah,
by the time my sister got married, it was 17 in Oregon, 16 in Idaho. So,
wow, and that was in the 90s?
That would have been 90 or 91.
Wow.
And so she got married in Payette. She was 16 and pregnant.
Wow. Well, they lowered it then.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's still 1 year different.
Wow, okay. So
yeah.
And back then, I remember my parents, they got over here, but they had to have blood tests. You know, that's when they had to make sure they weren't cousins or I don't know what they were testing for. Yeah, and so they had to actually go to Caldwell Hospital to get the blood test, but then went back to Payette to the Justice of the Peace or whatever. Times have changed. We don't do blood tests anymore.
Nope.
How weird that they didn't trust people enough to not be cousins.
Yeah, or maybe they were testing for syphilis or something in those days. I don't know. In the 1950s.
Huh. Yeah, they probably had the RPR at the time. That's the standard syphilis screen.
Okay, yeah.
But RPR is just it's a really broad spectrum test that if you have syphilis, it will be positive. It can also be positive if there's something else wrong.
Yeah.
So it's one with a whole lot of false positives, but it's a cheap, easy to do test. Maybe. So it's still commonly used.
Huh.
Can't say for sure that would have been the test they had back then, but I know there as tests have gotten more precise, wider spectrum ones have gone out of style. Like for hepatitis C for quite a while, ALT testing was the only thing you could do. It's just looking for a particular liver enzyme. If you have an acute case of hepatitis C, you will have an elevated ALT.
Mm.
You'll also have an elevated ALT if you have drank too much, say a weekend of binge drinking, if you have psoriasis, or in some cases, you can even have it from certain other infections, or I've even seen it with people who have started doing some really intense physical training. That like the elevated protein levels in their blood will cause the liver to panic. And it's just an enzyme to show that the liver is panicking. By the time somebody has a positive ALT from hepatitis C, they've been infectious for decades. So now there's actual hepatitis C screening, so you don't have to do that one for that. So now it's just general use for general liver health.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sorry, that was a bit of a wild tangent.
No. No, it's all good information.
Yeah.
Man, it would be so awesome if you could give some tips to Amber, the coordinator of our meetups out here, because she really wants to just keep it private and quiet and just like a little social group. And I've never understood that.
Well, it's a risk, you know, like you were talking about your reporter people coming in, and you know, you do take a risk when you open it up, but you have to, because
things don't get done otherwise.
You want to reach out, and there's people out there that still to this day I'm amazed when people say, I thought I was the only one, or I didn't know a group existed, you know.
We get that all the time.
Yeah. And you know, our highway cleanup, it's a sign. It's on two sides of the highway, and people come to us from that. They see that sign, and then they Google and find us that way. So that's an idea. I don't know if you have people that want to volunteer as well as social wise. Well,
we actually do have a trail cleanup and have a sign out there.
Hmm.
But that's really the only public thing that we do aside from drinking.
Yeah, it's, you know, it also, maybe she'll, as she wants other people to start taking over some of the responsibilities, she'll feel the need to open it up for more involvement and people to come in that might be interested in taking a leadership role.
Yeah.
But then, you know, that's another whole issue. You have to be careful. I felt like, you know, you never know who wants to take over and what their intentions are. So you do have to be careful.
Yeah.
You know, make sure that people are in it for the right reasons. And it can be fragile. And I don't know. I think that's changing. I read reports all the time now where especially young people are, you know, not religious. And so it's, I think, what are we at? 25% now? Non-religious? The nuns?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that latest one,
23 from the latest Pew study.
So you know, I think there becomes a tipping point where we've struggled long and hard to have our atheist civil rights, but I think it's going to become more and more, you know, just it's just more rational, more logical, you know, than believing in something that you know. You've probably seen the Kissing Hank's Ass skit. If you haven't, you should. Oh, it's called Kissing Hank's Ass, and it's hilarious. It's kind of like two Jehovah's Witnesses come to the door, and they say, you know, you have to do all these things, essentially kiss Hank's ass, and then you'll get $10 million when you leave town. And they're talking about, essentially, you know, when you die, you go to heaven, but but there's never a confirmation of that. And that's what this whole skit is about. Like, you know, the guy's questioning the people at his door saying, well, has anybody ever come back and told you that they for sure got the $10 million? Like, no, that's one of the rules. Once you leave town, you can't come back and tell anyone about it. So,
oh, wow.
So, yeah, I think more and more people are thinking about it and thinking, wait, there's no evidence. And so why should I believe this just because my parents do or whatever? So I think times are changing. It's good.
Yeah, it really is. And yeah, the whole leadership angle is there's always new people coming up that can be developed. We're in the middle right now of doing some restructuring with TV Corps. And one of the goals with that restructuring is to be able to help the groups better develop new leaders. Because you always need to have people on their way up. Secular Student Alliance here had quite the pattern of one great charismatic leader who does amazing things and then graduates mm-hmm. and then it dies. Mm-hmm. And somebody else picks it up. And this most recent reboot, they're at a third president in a row.
In 1 year?
Out of the last 3 years.
Oh, okay.
So Jake got it going again. And then Issa took over for a semester. And now Lindy is the new president. And they've got 4 or 5 officers in line ready to become president when she graduates.
Great. And the speaker this last National Day of Reason was mm-hmm. awesome.
Yeah.
And he was amazing.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's hard. They're students and they graduate.
Yep. Yeah. And it's just, yeah, having the people ready to move up that's critical. You have to, like, for students, you have to identify freshmen and sophomores that can take over when they're juniors. And for the other groups, you need to find people that are at just the right point in their life mm-hmm. to be able to step up and take it on.
Mm-hmm. It's a thankless job, you know? You work hard, you know, and you come under criticism, but hopefully you get as much gratitude as well.
Yeah.
Because some people, and you know, it's your volunteer, and some people like to gripe, but I'm hoping you get enough kudos as well, as they appreciate what you do.
Yeah. We are just about to the 1 hour mark.
Oh, that went Sweet. By fast. This was too much fun.
I looked over and I was thinking we were probably at about 35, 40 minutes. Nope.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm very, very happy that people are out there like you are doing this stuff because nobody else is. Man, you're just kind of kicking ass.
Are you talking to Dustin?
No, screw Dustin, you.
I, you know, thank you, Wesley, but I have to be honest. I've totally backed off now, and I'm in the background, and I'm glad to help, but, you know, I'm not doing hardly anything more. Now Dustin, Lauren, Gary, you know, they're doing it. And what Dustin was saying is you need leaders coming up, mm-hmm. and I feel guilty many times because I'm not. Out there writing letters. I'll see things, and that used to be one of my things I would do is write letters to the government officials or to letters to the editor, and I just don't do it. But when I see a letter, you know, like, you know, Art often still writes in the mm-hmm. in the Nampa paper, and I was like, yes, you know, yes, someone's out there doing it. So I thank you, but I have to admit I'm not doing as much as I should anymore.
But with you can only do it for so long. And
we have a lot of the same leaders still going.
Yeah.
Still going.
Yeah.
You know, Van, Jeanette, Paul, they keep going. And I admire that.
Yeah. But eventually,
yeah,
everybody needs to know where their limit is. And we don't, if people keep doing it past that burnout point, you get a lot of ineffectual leadership.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of wisdom and humility to actually be able to take that step back when you need to.
Now I garden, take my frustration out on those weeds.
Yeah. Well, and you know, for all we know, in a couple of years, you might come back with renewed passion and vigor.
Who knows?
Or you may just enjoy life.
I just am so glad that we've got leaders like you, and I just want to support what you're doing, you know? I think that's what I can do best now, is just be supportive and helpful when I'm asked, because it takes energy.
Yeah. And, like, one of the things we were wanting to have you on talk about is how it was before the modern movement.
Yeah.
Because there's the so-called new atheists, the atheists of the internet age, and thought of as being these horrible, militant people. No, we just...
Well, and...
We have an easier time getting the message out and aren't as afraid.
And you know that really strikes me as strange, because my first indoctrination, or not, no, my first involvement with this was my connection with American Atheists, that was founded by Madeline Marie O'Hare, who was known as the most hated woman in America. You'd call her the militant atheist, probably, mm-hmm. you know, but when I got involved with that organization, it was so focused on separation of state and church and atheist civil rights. It wasn't, I mean, I'm sure she did attack religion on its own lack of merit, but really I focused on just the government issue. And so it's funny that you say that, because it kind of maybe has come full circle.
Yeah.
You know, if you're being accused of being militant, and it's, I've heard things that say, just because we speak out, then we're called militant. But, you know, the religious folks, they're speaking out all the time. But when we do it, we're militant. But it's interesting, because I learned, you know, all the reading I did was the Madeline Marie O'Hare stuff. And I look back and I think some of that was pretty in your face. Even though I didn't go there, she did. Mm-hmm. but so, I don't know. I think that we'll be accused of being evil and bad no matter what we do, just because we exist.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that call David Silverman, you know, the current head of the AA, that he's the evil atheist. And then you have those nice, you know, fuzzy atheists on the side that are, you know, basically doing the same thing. But, you know, yeah, you just need somebody to... say, like, oh, yeah, there's the bad one over there. And then, but these are the good ones. And, you know, they're I don't know. It's kind of like a little bait and switch thing to me.
You know, and you need all kinds. And I liked playing the good atheist. You know, I still want to get along with everybody. And I have friends that are religious. And so, you know, I like taking a softer approach with religious people, mm-hmm. per se. But the government officials is who I choose to channel my energy toward. But I think it takes all kinds,
mm-hmm.
and then they can poke their finger however they want to, but it takes all kinds to make to make a difference. You need the soft ones, the hard ones, and whatever. And we need to get as many people speaking out as possible, so mm-hmm. that shows who we are. They can't stereotype us. We're all different types of people.
Yeah. And what Silverman is best at doing is getting in the news.
Yeah.
He's figured out how to get $10,000 to get him onto
O'Reilly.
20 million TVs.
Yeah, he's just got O'Reilly's number. It's awesome.
All right. So, Susan, do you have anything you'd like to plug? Or your garden, maybe?
Yeah. Grow your own food. Eat locally. Yeah, very involved in that, especially with Tim, my husband. We garden and very into that whole scene. So, I'm living the life.
Awesome.
While you're out here on the forefront, I'm in the garden.
Awesome.
Well, eat a tomato for me.
All right. Tomatoes are easy, Wesley. Other things I can't grow, keep trying, but tomatoes, yes, can grow those. So I'll send you some over there in rainy Seattle area.
Oh, goodness. I would love that.
All right. Well, Susan, thank you very much for joining us. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you for inviting me. And Wesley, I hope someday to meet you in person.
I would love that.
We'll be right back. Thank you for listening to another episode of Atheist Nomads. You can find us online at www.atheistnomads.com. Contact us at contact@atheistnomads.com or leave us a voicemail message at 541-203-0666. You can also like us on Facebook or leave us a review on iTunes, Zune, or wherever else you find the podcast. Until next time, this has been the Atheist Nomads.